Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yeah, turn on the People Opinionated Podcast. This week we got Coach Cowher coming on because it's Raven Steelers, hon. Neither team showed up last week. Who's going to show up this week? Real quick, you ever want to get Coach Cowher on your pod? All you got to do is get some wavy Utz chips, hon. Apparently, you can't get them up in New York City. If you bring a duffel bag of chips up there, the yellow kind, wavy Utz, Coach Cowher, do whatever you want, hon.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. We are live at Chatter at the corner of Jennifer Street Northwest and Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, inside the line that demarks the District of Columbia from the state of Maryland. We are a full-service restaurant. We are a for-profit restaurant. And we are happy that as Tori Clark is here, her hubby Brian is here. Spending money makes me happy. Barry Zerluga is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. David Aldridge will not be here. Doesn't matter if he's late today. Nigel is running the board. And Rebecca, with a party of 20, is here to celebrate her birthday.
Oh.
And that is money in the bank.
Oh, how about that?
We're happy with that. So I get this. I get a big box of soap. And it's from Tony Beeson of I Have a Piano fame. And he writes, Dear Dr. Tony, a few weeks ago, a listener sent in some goat's milk soap. They didn't send in. No, a little from Bahrain.
Hand-delivered.
Came in here and hand-delivered a big box of goat's milk soap, which I was reluctant to try for fear that I would get goat disease on some level. But everybody's used it, said it's great. And Tony Beeson writes, more recently, someone sent in some homemade soap crafted by their children. Am I correct in understanding that soap is the new coin of the realm? In the spirit of the show, and I'll have a box of that, I've canvassed the tri-state area hotels for soap and humbly submit the tribute herein. There's like 60 little bars of hotel soap here.
That's right.
Barry's already smelled half of them.
Yeah.
It's made out of oatmeal.
Some of them are good. P.S. Speaking of numerology, as I was conducting this activity, a question occurred to me. If the Four Seasons Resort merged with Motel 6 and Super 8, would it be logical to assume that the new company would be named Super Resort Motel 10? I don't think so. I don't think there's anything in the world that could get the Four Seasons involved with Motel 6 or Super 8, do you?
Doubtful.
No, it can't. So we've got soap here. We can give this out.
Yeah, and by the way, when I was on the phone with you yesterday, and this is a very exciting moment for
me. Oh, yes. Yes. tell, because Michael needs to hear this.
We were chatting, and I don't remember being like...
I told his sister last night when she called.
I'm sure she was thrilled.
Yes.
I legitimately was thrilled. You're like, hey, there's a great license plate number, and you read it off, and it was a pretty cool license plate number.
EP9999. EP9999, which means that the next person in line gets... EQ0001.
That's how that works?
I assume.
You're sure of that?
It's an assumption. How do you think it works?
I think it's completely random.
You think you walk into a DMV and they have scattered license plates?
Yes, they do indeed. I've seen them. They have hundreds of license plates. They might have printed them in order, but they just randomly hand you one.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was in order. Wow,
EP 999999 must have been a special request.
Have you ever?
No, because there's... That's how many there are for... If you have four numbers and two letters, you go from 0001 to 999. That's it. You got almost 10,000. Clearly almost 10,000.
We need to get somebody from DMV on the show.
I don't think that's how it works. I just don't.
So you're telling me...
I'm telling you...
So if you're telling me that if you go in... Let's say you go into the DMV branch in Georgetown.
Yes.
Okay? And you want to register two cars. You have moved here from New Jersey... And you want to register two cars, and you hand in the registration, you ask for license plates. You think you don't get two in order?
I guarantee you don't get two in order. I mean, otherwise we would see couples, families with license plates that were one after the other.
If they registered.
You're saying a family has never moved here from New Jersey and registered the cars at the same time?
I don't know if they registered them at the same time. I don't know.
I have never seen... license plate numbers that correlate to each other, unless they are vanity plates and people put,
But you're an agent of disorder in the universe.
That's correct.
You print these license plates. They give you a big stack of license plates. You think that somebody at night goes and shuffles them up like a dealer at Vegas?
There's 10 windows. So let's say each window gets a stack. That stack, like a deck of cards, might be broken at random intervals.
But I am actually arguing... Well,
Barry's going much wilder than that.
I'm saying that they weren't
Barry's
ever
going for chaos.
In order. Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah. I'm saying that,
it's a
that
random
when...
generator.
When the, yes, that is what I'm saying. I'm saying it is not a... It's never been ordered. Have you ever been to a DMV? Does anything seem orderly about that?
Like, the one at Georgetown, I went.
It's not bad.
I was able to re-register my car under my old plates.
But wait a minute, prisoners aren't making license plates anymore.
I was thinking
they were.
But there's a grid for making the license plates. There's an order to the making of the license plates. So it seems logical to me that there's an order for distributing the license plates.
I'll research this offline. Which state, continuing license plate trivia, which state has the most personalized license plates?
I think it's Maine.
The most personalized license plates?
Vanity plates.
I would go for New York because they have the most people. Or California. Florida. New York or California.
I have this.
Do you have an answer?
Yes, I do.
Oh.
I found this on the interweb. Serial coding license plate numbers are usually assigned in ascending order, beginning with a starting point such as AAA-001.
Wow.
Thus, an observer familiar with the sequence can determine roughly when the plate was issued. Okay? So in a few cases, they're done in descending order.
I stand down.
Like, I know, because I watch it. Well, Tori, give your answer.
Virginia.
Has the most?
Correct.
Okay. So I know that in the District of Columbia, because it's very important to me what the letters are and what the numbers are, I know that at a given time they introduce the new set of letters. You know, like right now I think we're on probably FN or FO. FO, if your name was
Frank
O'Malley, you know, and you wanted FO, then you'd wait to see the first one you saw, and then you'd go there and get that next license plate.
My error here was thinking that I had put anywhere near as much thought into this as you. I completely acquiesce. I will pay for my breakfast on the way out.
Does anybody
remember, you used to be able to go, and I used to pick it up in that dreadful...
That's how I got AI. I mean, I waited for AI. By the way,
you know, you can pay for whatever you want.
I think in the District of Columbia, I think they've stopped using I as a second letter. And that's because I think that when you are identifying a car, somebody might think it's a 1 and not an I. So, like, I don't think there's EI, certainly not EIEIO, but I think there may be EE and EF and EG and EH and then EJ. I don't think there's EI.
Can we go back
to... Because, as Michael knows, I pay attention.
Well, that's clear from this discussion.
Yes.
So... To the original point, why is EP9999 such a cool...
Well, first of all, because it's four in a row.
Oh, okay.
It's the same number,
so you're thinking
four
like
in a row. It's a fabulous plate.
Does anybody remember when the diplomatic plates, there used to be a code, and you could tell by the first
the country.
Letters what country
they
was.
They don't do it anymore.
Oh, they don't? Because you could get a little folder that told you what the code was. I kept mine in the glove compartment, so if somebody cut me off, I could throw the appropriate...
Oh, yeah, I used to love it.
But they stopped doing it, and I'm pretty sure, listeners can tell us if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the Soviet plates used to start with FU.
Really? No. Well, we're coming to that. We're going to see, because we're in the Fs now. We're going to see if the District of Columbia...
You have got to back away from the license plates, honey. This is worrisome.
What? This is...
Welcome to my life.
Yeah.
Every day.
I saw a Virginia plate, a 1111 the other day. Virginia has three letters because they have so many more people in Virginia than the districts. So.
I need to be more prepared for this when I come. Nigel, could you just give me a heads up?
Did I not brief you on this?
No, you did not.
By the way, Tony and Nigel, the only two people I know who actually talk on the phone anymore.
Talk all the time.
Well, yeah, it's funny.
I don't like...
I love to talk
I mean,
on the
texting
phone.
Is okay, but I'd rather actually talk to people.
I find that when people are texting back and forth with me, I'll just say, well, I'm going to call you, and I call them, and they won't pick up
the
phone.
They don't pick up.
No, I do that.
Yeah.
You don't pick up?
It's terrible. It's a terrible... It's a character flaw.
Even if you know who it is and that you like them?
I mean, there's not that many people I like.
Oh.
I mean, no, I should... I, yes,
that's
if I like them,
the
I will occasionally pick up, yes.
Okay.
If it's my mom.
So let me get to the largest story of the day. And it's so large in sports that it's not in the sports section. Because when I got the paper this morning at about 5:15 in the morning, I went right to the sports section to see the story about the FBI charges against a variety of basketball coaches and money managers out there. And it was on A1, which is where it belonged, but it surprised me a little
bit. We call it buried on the front.
Yeah, it was buried on the bottom of the front. FBI, okay, just to start with, the FBI, that's the... second group of scariest letters. IRS is one. If the IRS goes after you, you're done.
We're CIA.
No, it's not like they miss. They shoot and miss a lot. The FBI is second. This is not the NCAA. People said, well, it's not the NCAA. No, it's not the NCAA. The NCAA has no power. They have nothing. They're clowns. The NCAA are clowns. The FBI is a government agency that conducted a sting of sorts and has now arrested or charged, I don't know, arrested, charged 10 different people with corruption and bribery, including four high-level assistant basketball coaches at big programs, Oklahoma State, USC, Auburn, and Arizona. Part and parcel of this is a school that has yet to be identified but was self-identified, and the charge is that $100,000 in money to a recruit, which magically made the recruit go to that school, happened, and that school is apparently Louisville, and the University of Miami, Miami, Florida, is allegedly involved as well and has not yet been named. This isn't, people will tell you this is an old story. I will tell you this is an old story, but these are new details. It used to be that you assumed that when players were recruited, and you heard this all the time about Kentucky, because Kentucky had so much money and basketball mattered so much in Kentucky. And by the way, now, and I'll get to Barry, but Barry's looking at me, I'll get to him in a second. But I think the two schools in the country that would surprise me the most if they were involved in this are Kentucky and Duke, because they really don't have to be. They can say, look at the last 5 years of drafts and look at the players that we had. So if you come here, you're going to get drafted. So they don't actually have to do it. It's other schools that have to do it because they don't have that track record. And it used to be alums or boosters or people like that just directly handed money, cash money to kids. And it wasn't a whole lot of money. It was enough money, but wasn't a lot. Now you're involving money managers. Now you're involving agents. Now you're involving shoe companies. The shoe company wars, because some Adidas people have been charged in this. The shoe company wars among Adidas and Under Armour increasingly, and Nike, of course, all the time, have changed the landscape of college sports, as has the one and done. The one and done is a stupid, stupid idea. Let them go out of high school. If they fail, that's the way it goes. This is Darwinian. Let them go if they want to go. The one and done, I think, Barry, has led to more corruption than ever.
There's no question about it, because if you did allow that top tier of talent to just go just like Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant did, then it decreases the incentive to give these guys some holdover money and say, hey, you're going to get the big bucks next year, but we'll give you $100,000 here.
But for a year, we will corrupt you completely.
And corrupt ourselves. I mean, I think, to me, you said this is an old story with new details, and I do feel like people who are surprised by this haven't been paying attention at all. This is the culture of college basketball. It is an industry, and it's correctly labeled an industry, with an $8.8 billion television contract just for the NCAA tournament with CBS and Turner Sports.
And the players get nothing.
And it has an unpaid labor force.
So you've got nothing.
Billions of dollars literally flowing into this industry, where the workforce is not allowed to be paid. That is, I mean, it just logically, there's corruption. That's the only way you could
you have you the can AAU programs are totally corrupt.
Well, and that's what happened here too.
Tori has her hand up.
I have a question. Now, when you're done, go ahead. So the question is this: what we see, the depth and breadth of these institutions, the four or six, however you want to count it, is pretty broad, right? Coast to coast.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Isn't it likely that there are a lot more?
So that the point that so what I wrote this morning is
more.
Or yesterday morning
60 more
is
80
is
more.
That it, you anybody who reads this as you know if you're a fan of a certain school and you were like see the headline and you're like oh my gosh I wonder what schools I hope it's not my school I hope it's not Wisconsin or Kentucky or Alabama whatever. And you scan and you kind of go, whew, not mine. You're not
delusional.
Yeah, it's totally delusional.
Delusional.
It's just by chance that it wasn't yours.
Because it is yours.
Yes, yeah. It's yours. It's
not
all
mine. I wish Binghamton did this. We'd get better players. We don't do this. And in this particular case, you can focus on the assistant coaches, and that's fine because they're the ones being charged. And the schools have already said in a high and mighty way, oh, we had no idea, and so we're going to let this guy go. Go to the head coaches. Okay.
Absolutely.
If you have a longtime assistant, you're the head coach with a longtime assistant, and he's named in something like this, you knew.
Well, won't some of these assistant coaches roll and to give themselves a better deal?
I don't know how that works, but I know who's in trouble right now, and it's Richard Pitino.
So
Rick Pitino, his brother, his son is not in trouble necessarily, but he's had so many things in the last few years. I don't know how he can be the coach at the beginning of
the
season.
He is suspended for the first five ACC games this year already.
On the hooker thing.
Yes, on the hooker thing.
That he said he didn't know.
And was that last the motorcycle
night,
one?
Last night.
That's Bobby Petrino.
This is the one where...
And this isn't the one in the restaurant.
No, that's the other one.
This is the one where the staff member was enticing recruits to Louisville.
With hookers.
With hookers and strippers.
In the dorm rooms.
Which is, you know, course of business, apparently. Rick Pitino said he didn't know. Last night, Rick Pitino said, you know, this is a couple of bad actors here.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't know anything about his
program.
He may not know if Rick Pitino is employed by the University of Louisville.
He's going to go. Sean Miller, said to be the best coach in the country who hasn't yet made the Final Four.
Right.
This is going to be tough on him. Andy Enfield, who was at Florida Gulf Coast, made the big jump. This is going to be tough on him at USC. You have to look to the head coach. You have to look to the head coach. There's no other way of looking at this. And by the way, because this is the FBI, this is not going on. This is not the NCAA saying, all right, we're going to give you a couple of years off television. No.
This is real.
No.
And it will be a test. Good. The real test is Louisville, already on probation. Is the death penalty in play? Is there such a thing anymore? If, you know, we all know...
Well, that's
SMU
the NCAA,
football.
Though. Not-
yes, I know, but if you're going to pretend to be any sort of enforcement agency, but you blow them out of the water.
The president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, said yesterday, in essence, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Shocked.
Just shocked.
It's sickening.
That
there's
gambling
it is
going on
sickening.
In this establishment.
Wait, that's why, obviously, Jay Billis needs to be the president of the NCAA.
That's correct.
Like today.
Yes.
Like, really, today, he should be the president. Because he knows this
but
stuff goes on.
But unless until somebody actually spends time in jail. Right? In jail.
I think
prison. Some
of these guys,
these
have
guys are
going to
pen.
But they have to go.
But I also think...
They're handing money over. They are... In other words, if the system is corrupt on day one, their involvement in it is to create a spider web that entangles people through day 250. I mean, you sign with me for a year. We won't tell anybody. I'll front you the money. You'll go be a pro. So there are... How many... For all the kids that are drafted, let's say 20 one-and-dones are drafted, there's 200 sets of parents that think their kid is a one-and-done that are going to take
the
same amount of money.
But I think unless and until we change the fundamental system of how this works...
You got to pay kids.
You have to pay the kids, or at least give them the opportunity...
The Olympics is paying kids.
...to make money off their jerseys. Or it's ridiculous.
Something. It's outrageous. It is. Is it not? It's outrageous.
Crazy.
I wanted to lead the show with that.
It worked.
Okay. Good. License plates and corruption.
Well, yes, those are the
two
big stories.
Because if you're totally corrupt, you will end up making license plates. All right, we will take a break. We will come back with Richard Justice of MLB.com. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is my favorite read. This is the Spotify read.
Pace yourself.
Why is it my favorite
Pace
read?
Pace yourself.
Put a clock on me. Love this podcast? Well, did you know you can listen to it on Spotify while still enjoying your favorite tunes? It's easy. Just look for the podcast section within the Browse tab on your mobile device or search for your favorite shows. To find more podcasts, head to spotify.com/podcasts.
14 seconds.
Boom.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by James L. Johnson, Jr. from Apex Piping Systems in Newport, Delaware. That's not the name of his band. That's where he works. The name of his band is Edgewater Avenue, and this song is called Love Song. And he says, by the way, I still consider Tony to be an official member of the Apex Piping quality team. You know, you gotta haul pipe, you gotta load pipe, you gotta move pipe, you gotta do all that stuff. It's a lovely tune. And it plays in Richard Justice, who grew up listening to that sort of music in Texas. Richard Justice from MLB.com. A couple of very easy questions to start. Are we all set with the playoffs, or is there one or two things that could still happen?
Well, I think we're pretty much all set. The Minnesota Twins are in. Lost 100 games last year, and they're in this year, and that ain't ever happened before.
Right. That's good for them. That's good.
That is very good for them. And their general manager went to – they have a new general manager and an assistant general manager, Thad Levine and Derek Falvey. Derek Falvey is the president of baseball operations. He was in Cleveland for years. Tito Francona leaned on that guy like you can't believe. Like, everything he said, I got to go talk to Derek about that. And at the trade deadline, they said, you know what? We're not good enough. We're going to trade our closer to Washington. We're going to trade Jaime Garcia, pitcher we just acquired. We're going to trade him to the Yankees. And we're just going to throw our kids out there. And they've led the major leagues in runs since the trade deadline. They've got these kids, Polanco. This guy, Byron Buxton, Tony, was a guy, the number one prospect in baseball for about three straight years. He blows you away when you see him in person, but it never worked. In the last 3 months, the guy has been an amazing player, and they're just a bunch of kids. I don't know if their pitching's good enough, but if you're the Yankees and you're playing them, they're a team you know you should beat, but you have a lot to worry about because they're playing with house money.
I'm going to assume then that if I ask the question, which team that's in surprises you the most, it would be the Minnesota Twins.
Oh, no question. But we got five teams that didn't make it last year, only five holdovers. Who saw Arizona and Colorado coming? Everybody liked their, they're going to score some runs, but they don't have enough pitching to go in. I think what's interesting is you look at the six divisions, the favorites all won.
Yeah.
And then the wild card. The wild card did what it was designed to do, to keep more teams in contention.
This is a technical question. If the way it works now, because World Series home field is no longer determined by the All-Star game, if higher seeds get knocked out, will they put the home field to the team that gets into the World Series with the most wins, or is there a different formula?
No, that's it.
Okay, good. So then you can advance and move up.
Right, yeah. If Cleveland gets knocked out, then we have then the Dodgers would be the new number one seed. If Cleveland gets knocked out, Houston's the number one seed in the American League. If the Dodgers get knocked out, then it's your hometown Nats.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, if in the World Series itself, it will be based on
record.
Who has the most wins. Good.
Right. Best record in the regular season.
So we know which team that's in surprises you the most. Which team in baseball that's out surprises you the most?
That's a great question, and give me 1 second to think about that. I thought Baltimore was going to surprise us again.
They collapsed terribly.
I thought Kansas City. You know, they kept the band together.
Yes. They're
going to break up the team. I thought they had another run left in them. They had a month or so where they played like it. And I never discount the St. Louis Cardinals, you know. And,
sound like Wilbon.
They kept dipping in. They kept changing the mix. But I guess my ultimate answer would be San Francisco. I looked at them, they may lose 100 games. I looked at them in spring training and thought, they got their pitching lined up again. They got this core of Posey and Crawford and Belt, and they've been terrible. They've been terrible since day one. It's there is a point where you have a window and you say, okay, it's not working. We've got to completely reshuffle the deck.
So the Dodgers, and I would compare the Dodgers to some degree to Aaron Judge, that they are great for a long period of time and then go through something where you go, wow, what is going on here? They now appear to have righted themselves. Is that in fact true? Do you look at the Dodgers now as the same team that was like 52 or 53 games over 500?
No, because
okay.
Corey Seager's playing hurt. I mean, like when you would talk about the National League MVP, you would say Rendon, Goldschmidt, Bryant, and half the Dodgers. I mean, literally half the Dodgers. Justin Turner, Corey Seager, this rookie Cody Bellinger. And Bellinger is playing okay. Seager's playing hurt. I think Turner may be playing hurt. This guy, Chris Taylor, a minimum salary guy that redid his swing last year, was phenomenal for a long time. He struggled some. And Jim Leland always said, don't tell me who won the most games. Tell me who's healthy in the last 2 weeks of September, and tell me who's playing well, who's got a good vibe. Now, it doesn't matter if they give the ball to Clayton Kershaw and he throws a shutout in game one, and then Yu Darvish throws a shutout, and those things could happen.
Yes.
But in their case, the pitching has to take control because all the other things we liked about them, including the bullpen, are shaky right now.
So I would go, I'm probably going to wade into somewhat dangerous territory here, and it's always sort of replete with the danger of somebody from another culture. And Yasiel Puig is from another culture, and he didn't grow up like kids in the United States. He did not. But this is the second manager now who's had trouble with Yasiel Puig and has had to bench him and sit him down. Mattingly pulled his hair out. Dave Roberts, a different guy, is benching Puig. Puig has fabulous talent. I mean, just fabulous talent. What's the deal?
Well, I thought if you had been in the Dodgers clubhouse 3 years ago, you thought there's bad vibes here. They got to fix this, and they completely fixed it, except for Puig, and he's been a good soldier the whole year and hadn't caused any problems. And they needed him. You know, he played better than we thought. I think it goes back to, look, the Astros have a kid that was the biggest star in Cuban baseball history, Yuli Gurriel. Guy never says a word, shows up on time. So I'm not going to go by that it's just the fact that someone from poverty being introduced to all the riches mm-hmm. of this country. Even though, the Hernandez brothers, Levon and El Duque, would tell you, hey, that's a temptation. You know, Levon would tell you, I did circles around Wendy's. I mean, because these are things you can't comprehend, and you have to learn to deal with them.
Richie, I remember this when Martina Navratilova defected to the United States, and in a year gained like 40 pounds because she couldn't pass a McDonald's without going in because she did not have this. She talked about that openly, and she became in a year not the great player, and then the next year got self-disciplined and became probably the greatest player ever. So, I mean, that happens.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things the Red Sox do, and I think other teams, I think the Cubs are doing it now, they take – who are baseball draft picks in this country? A lot of them are suburban kids that grew up with plenty. Mm-hmm. And what Theo did with the Red Sox, and I think he still does it with the Cubs, you take a group of your players, 10 or 12 of your top draft picks, and you take them to Dominican, and you show them – these kids come from a different background. They are not like us, but we have to learn to respect one another and play together and all of that. And I think everybody's tried with Yasiel Puig. They're just days. I mean, I used to listen to Vin Scully. He would just be amazed. You could tell Vinny didn't know if this was the best player he'd ever seen or the worst player. Every wall had to be run into. Every bag had to be stolen. Every pitch had to be swung at. And he'd been so much better than that. Having said all that, they need the guy.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Don Mattingly tried tough love. Dave Roberts is one of those guys that has no enemies in the game. He is as beloved and respected as anybody. If you can't play for Dave Roberts, then you better look yourself in the mirror. And so what's going to happen over these next 3 or 4 days is, hey, they're going to talk it out. I mean, really, because what I said about their offensive inconsistencies, he's got a 900 OPS against right-handed pitching. He makes them a better team. But there is a point that you just can't have the guy on your team anymore. You know, and there were things that happened this year, like it seemed like he was completely buying in. I know Adrian Gonzalez, for instance, said, no, I'm telling you, he is a good guy. But when you don't show up and when you seem to be half-hearted, you know, you can only talk so much.
In the last few days, the entire sports world has focused on whether or not to stand or kneel or do anything for the anthem. And this is very prevalent in football, where it started. We think it may be very prevalent in basketball. But you don't hear about it in baseball. I was surprised yesterday when we were doing happy birthday to the – is it Troy Archer, the pitcher from Tampa Bay?
It's Chris Archer.
Chris Archer, who's on TV a lot, and he's very, very good. And he has apparently publicly said, I want to kneel, but my teammates disagree with me, so out of respect to them, I'm not going to do it, which I thought was a sort of a great act. But I'm wondering, is there – when you travel around, when you go to these teams, is there anything about protest or kneeling that's out there?
I think it's much less. 7% of the league is African-American, and this is very much a racial inequality issue
sure.
that exists in this country. The A's backup catcher, Bruce Maxwell, met with his guys, I guess it was it Saturday night? It was Saturday night, and said, this is what I'm going to do. He has the chops to do this. He was born on a military base. He took unbelievable pride in wearing the red, white, and blue on the 4th of July, all of that stuff. And he said it was an uncomfortable meeting, but he handled it exactly the same way. This is what I'm going to do, and this is why I'm going to do it. And Mark Canha, an outfielder, put his hand on his shoulder. And afterwards, Mark said, and others said, I'm telling you right now, that man needed a friend and that to do what he did. His dad is a veteran. They got things yelled at them in the stands. And so you take that step, and baseball is a much more conservative culture. And It doesn't have the African American influence at this time, although obviously they're working like hell to try to change it.
Yeah.
So I think there are players that probably agree, but they just, as Chris Archer said, they're not at the point that they would feel comfortable doing it. Let me say this, though. I just saw what impact a devastating hurricane had on this city, and I saw players of all stripes, all nationalities, in both two different teams show up and go to work, roll up their sleeves and go to work and pitch in and say, this is my community, this is my country. I mean, it bring tears to your eyes to see how engaged and how sensitive these guys were. So I think, and what managers have said is, if you have a guy that goes to your team like Bruce Maxwell did and said, this is how I feel, and this is why I feel the way I feel, look around what's happening in this country, I think they would respect it.
Okay, I've got Barry Svrluga here, so I want to bring him in and ask you the question that is uppermost in the minds of everybody in Washington, other than the fact that the bullpen is so shaky. It's Bryce Harper, and Richie, he hasn't played in a long time. What do you think his impact should be in postseason play?
Well, I think he still changes them. You know, there's a fear factor with him, as Barry would know. He does impact how everybody else is pitched and the stress level of the pitcher and all that. We've always looked at him as Superman. I mean, from the moment he arrived in 2012, but this may be too much to ask. So I don't know how impactful he can be on their games. Do they need him? I mean, I think, you know, they are better than the Cubs today. That doesn't mean they're going to win, but they are better than the Cubs. But he could change them. So, you know, we saw Kyle Schwarber last year in the World Series come out and played no games the whole year, and was a really good player. So it can happen, but I think you got to be careful. You got to manage expectations. I don't know if Barry agrees with that.
Well, I think that's reasonable. And one thing I would say about Harper, however, is this is a guy who not only loves the spotlight, but kind of lives for the spotlight. And he's known since the day he got the assessment of the knee, and it turned out to be a bone bruise, and he hadn't blown it out, that his kind of entire season will be evaluated in October. So there's a timing issue. There's an awkwardness now. Not only does he have only six games left to get at-bats in, but then they have that weird four-day layoff, which could mess up a guy who had played 150 games. So I think there's no real way to know how to handle it. I do think the guy that we're talking about is equipped both physically, because he's not just any guy. He's a physical specimen. I think that's one of the reasons why the injury wasn't worse. And he mentally yearns for, it's national TV, this place is packed, we're at Wrigley Field, and I'm ready to go yard.
Yeah, and I'd also say one of the things Dusty Baker has to do is manage his rest. I mean, he can't play every – he came out in the fifth inning last night, right?
That's right.
Something like, he can't play every inning or every game because it's just different. And so he's going to have a day off or two, or, you know, or certainly innings off, just to manage the mental as he tries to get everything mentally and physically on the same page. But you know, with this guy, expectations are just different. And like you said, this is what he lives for.
Well,
this is the time of year he wants to be the number one guy in terms, in every way you can rank players.
We are talking too about a lineup that, even though it had huge 41 games missed for Harper and huge chunks missed for Trey Turner, who's a huge engine at the top of the lineup, and Jason Worth and Michael Taylor and Adam Eaton out for the year, entered last night tied with the Cubs for the high-scoring team in the National League. They've pieced it together somehow and been able, less so lately, they've kind of sputtered lately, and that's partly because since they clinched, Dusty's been rolling out lineups that would have been Syracuse lineups occasionally. But this is a very complete offensive team with balance left and right that can put together a lineup that could scare pitchers in October. Harper's a big part of it. He has to be right for it to be, at its best.
Okay. Thank you,
Yeah,
Barry.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about playing well at the right time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's Arizona and it's the Nationals. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win it, but right now they're the teams that are going in, you think, you don't want to play them right now because you can line up Scherzer, Strasburg, Gio, and it's Roark in game four, right?
Yep.
That lineup is going to stress a pitcher out.
Thanks, Richie. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Richard Justice, MLB.com, boys and girls. We will take a break. We'll come back with news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad. As everybody knows, everybody here has the Harry's razor. Everybody here uses the Harry's razor. Everybody here is happy with the Harry's razor. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they will give you their trial shave set for free. When you sign up at harrys.com/TonyK, all you have to do is pay for shipping. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, still claiming in the copy to be two ordinary guys who are fed up with buying overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own German factory. I mean, how ordinary could they have been if they bought their own German factory? With over 100 years of blade-making experience to ensure the highest quality, all products are backed by a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's offers their blades at half the price of the leading five-blade razor, selling directly to you over the internet. You can claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value. You get it for free when you sign up and you cover the shipping. And your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, five precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover. And to get your free trial set, go to Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com/TonyK right now. That's harrys.com/TonyK.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This has a Rolling Stones sort of beginning to it, doesn't it?
A little bit like Jumpin' Jack Flash.
It really does. This is Dustin Merkel from the band The Lively Exchange from Atlanta, Georgia. This is called Losing Streak. This is very good. Michael, if people want to send their music in to get played on this show and at the end of the podcast in full, how do they do it?
They can email the show, jingles@tonyquinizershow.com.
And are we selling anything?
Yeah, we're always selling. Always be selling. Yes, I would recommend you get a nice coffee mug, the Bistro coffee mug that holds 14 ounces of your favorite beverage. Take that to your workplace. Or the steel tumbler, which is great for hot and cold beverages.
And how would people get that?
They can go to shop.tonyquinizershow.com or just go to our website. There's a quick jump-off button.
Okay, and the jump-off, isn't that some girl? Isn't Wilbon always uses that term.
Careful.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. I'm not sure what that means.
Well, backup. Eric Rydholm uses it. They have me open the show with that sometime.
I was really not
prepared
for
the
show. Tricks
we play on the old man.
Anyway, Also, Johnny, I'm wearing the Johnny O baseball shirt today, the
Looks
Nats
good.
Johnny O baseball
Looks
shirt
good.
Today.
Ready for the playoffs.
Right, nice. So can people get Johnny O baseball stuff?
You can get baseball stuff, and you can get just casual, you know, casual wear.
But your favorite team, you can get your favorite team.
Yeah, get ready for the playoffs. And if you're going to go to the President's Cup, take some pictures in your Johnny O gear and tag us and Johnny O on your social accounts.
And nice. So there is the Tony K code.
Tony K code is active.
Okay. So
And I should also point out, yes. If you are interested in doing a podcast, you can also go to our website and contact us if you'd like to rent our studios. Maybe you're coming in from out of town.
But here's the key word there, to rent.
Rent.
To rent our studios. Again,
yes.
This is a full-service, for-profit restaurant and enterprise.
Do you
enterprise.
Get to rent Nigel along with that?
You can.
I am involved in a lot of shows. We've got a number of great shows. Andy Poley does a show. Dan Kolko with the Nats. I think he's doing his last show of the season tomorrow, which is Thursday. We've got a great Civil War show. We've got a housing show.
We're not going to be on Friday.
We're not going to be on Friday.
This Friday.
But
we'll be back next week for all five.
My personal favorite, because I'm involved in it, is At the Movies with Archer Dan.
Yes.
And you can catch that every Friday. And we will be taping that.
Please pay us rent.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. So there you go.
Okay.
And I will start off this very strong newscast with some very important information. And, of course, it relates to license plate, Mr. Tony.
Yes.
In Washington, D.C. right now, July 2013 to present, here are your numbers. EK0000 to FN9999. So once they get through that, that's when they go to the next round.
Okay.
That's so there's where you are.
So there you go.
There you go. There you go. Big doings in Alabama. Roy Moore has won the primary, the Alabama Republican primary for the U.S. Senate on Tuesday night. He is... he's a sort of out there guy. He's not what I would call an establishment.
Wasn't he a judge, a state judge, and wasn't he suspended a couple of times?
He was. Yeah, twice suspended.
It's great to have Tory here on this.
As the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, he defended incumbent Luther Strange, who was appointed to that seat, vacated by
Jeff
Sessions.
How do you get suspended as the chief judge of the Alabama Supreme Court?
I think they were misnamed. I think the other one should really be called Strange. His comments, his record. But it's proving there's something going on in this country, people, and those of us in the Acela Corridor are missing it.
So he's the God's will guy.
Yes.
And by the way, that does not disqualify you from elected office anywhere in the country. There's no reason that it should. If the people of Alabama want him, they got a right to have him.
They voted strongly for him.
But it's different. He's different. He's different.
Here's what he was suspended for. He refused to obey a federal court order to remove from his courthouse a monument to the Ten Commandments.
Just stop there for a second. Forget about the Ten Commandments. A judge, a sitting judge, refuses to enforce a federal law. You don't get to do that.
No.
Right?
No.
You get to have your opinions, but you don't get to do that.
And he came back and was suspended again?
Yes. He had a legal opinion in 2002 where he described homosexual conduct as an inherent evil. And he has also argued that the legalized same-sex marriage should not be considered the rule of law.
And he won.
He won the primary. So now he'll, I guess the election is actually going to be in December.
Yeah, what's interesting is he was the choice or the favorite of Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, etc. So he was the establishment choice, and he lost.
Oh, yeah, Strange was.
The other one.
How do you identify the establishment anymore?
That's hard to.
Great point. Mr. Tony, this is a fascinating story that you pointed out to me this morning in the style section of the Washington Post. There is a sitcom on right now called Kevin Can Wait. See what they did there?
Yes.
That's with very Kevin clever. James. Yes, very clever there. And there was a woman on it who played his wife, an actress by the name of Erin Hayes. They had season one, I think 16 or 20 episodes.
And I think they were a hit 24. Show.
Yeah, 24 episodes.
This
I'm
is
sorry.
A CBS comedy. I think it's a hit show.
Yeah, doing quite well.
I've never seen it, but so what?
But then an actress by the name of Leah Remini, who played Kevin James's wife on their show King of Queens.
Another hit show.
She became available. So they decided.
Kevin James is the guy who's the cop in the mall.
Paul Blart,
right? Yes.
Big guy, healthy guy.
Yeah, and he's one of the guys who's always in every Adam Sandler movie.
Yes, I think I've seen his stand up before. He's a lovely fellow.
Okay,
lovely fellow, very funny. But this is just very odd. So they killed off Erin Hayes, her character, and they bring in Leah Remini. And so how did they handle this? It's always sort of a dodgy thing how shows handle this when cast members are removed. I think famously in the show Bewitched, they replaced one of the husbands with another husband and never acknowledged it whatsoever.
That's both had dark hair.
They did. I both think the first name was Dick as well. So it was sort of a strange thing there. Sometimes the character just goes away and they don't acknowledge it. Here they said it would take place like a year later, and Kevin James gets a note in the mail from the gym to his dead wife and saying, and they don't acknowledge it until he says, oh, yeah, they shouldn't be sending that. She's been dead for a year now. I need to call them or something like that.
The daughter says that.
The daughter says that, yes. So it's, you know.
How do we feel about this? It's television. And if he works better with this, if he likes working with this other wife, is it bad?
The first actress should have had a better contract, clearly.
Right.
Or maybe they gave her a lot of money
She could have been paid, yeah.
How would you feel if you were the first actress?
Well, I'd be a bit upset
again,
about it.
If they gave me a lot of money. You want to give me a lot of money to walk away from this show, I'm gone. I mean, I'll sit outside on the little
porch there. No, but we like you here.
There, yeah.
We like
you here. But I bet they took care of her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe they actually killed her.
Okay, so I think the story would have been buried on the front, as we say. Would you rather they switch to the new actress and not acknowledge that?
I don't know. I don't think they have to. I mean, it's television.
Sure, right.
I don't think they have to. I don't think anybody believes that these people live next door and they're all related. But I think it's interesting that they came up with a scheme to do it and do it very quickly and pretend a year had gone by or something like that. That's pretty smart.
I kind of like it because it's kind of creative.
Yeah.
Shouldn't these things be mildly creative?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty good.
It just feels a little awkward as I'm reading through some of the
dialogue.
Like,
it doesn't say, oh, her, she's dead.
Well,
like,
this is the daughter. So the daughter has to get married because he's got, I don't know, this guy needs a green card, which I can totally relate to. And he's given an emotional speech, and he says, we're just missing one thing. The daughter says, I know. I wish Mom was here, too. Kevin James says, she'd be very proud of you. Pause. 1, 2, 3. Well, time's ticking. Let's get married. So it just seems a bit awkward.
Okay. It's definitely getting the show buzz, though.
Yeah.
So now he will end up marrying the...
Well, yeah, they're going to introduce her. He used to work with her, and now they're going to introduce her as, like, a friend.
Is she a trophy wife? Is she significantly younger and prettier?
No,
I don't spoil season two for me.
Yeah, she's attractive. I think they're about the same age. That was always sort of the joke in King of Queens was, how can a bloke like that be with a lovely woman like that? Yeah. And she's famous because she's come out, she was a Scientologist. So she's had like these breaking free from Scientology
kind of a running documentary about
it,
right?
Yeah. Okay. So it's fascinating stuff.
Good.
Tough times for the University of Maryland and the quarterback position.
It's unbelievable.
What happens there? How many?
It's two, and the other one in preseason has got a foot injury, so it's really three quarterbacks. They've lost two for the entire season.
But this is also like you have to do some sort of an investigation into what the quarterbacks at the University of Maryland have been drinking for about 6 years. This will be the fourth time in 6 years that they have started at least three different quarterbacks. You cannot have any continuity in a program or move a program forward if you don't have, and these are both freak plays. I mean, they both tore their ACL. The kid that tore his ACL on Saturday, Kasim Hill, who's a local kid who went to St. John's his last year, he looked like, okay, he's getting thrown in a little bit early as a true freshman, but this is the guy that you build a program around, and now they're starting from scratch again. It's very difficult.
This is not what happens at Alabama. At Alabama, they stay out there.
They somehow stay out
They're good.
Do you have the name for the new quarterback?
No, it sounds like they just got him
from a micro econ class.
Yeah. What is it? It's Borschenschlager or something like that.
Yeah, Max Borschenschlager.
See, I wasn't
that far off.
Yeah.
I have no idea who that is.
Yeah,
that's because he was third on the depth chart when coming in the season.
We are, by the way, we are a Maryland bar.
Yes.
I mean,
we
play the games on TVs here. In case you're wondering what to do when the games are on, we have them on.
Yes.
Sometimes Gary is here.
I was going to say, isn't there some affiliation with the
ownership?
Sometimes
Gary is here, yes.
Mr. Tony, I know you love cakes and I know you love mugs. How would you like to have a mug cake?
I saw a story about this today and I didn't know what a...
Takeaway sad.
Right, tell me.
What is mug cake? What is it? Do you know what it is?
It's a Duncan Hines product. There's actually this whole, I don't know, genre of sort of single serving everything. So it is a single serving cake that you put the ingredients in a mug and you cook it in the microwave and you have it all by yourself.
In the
which
dark
is the
wine
antithesis.
What's wrong with that?
Because it's cakes
with
are
a pint of ice cream.
Cakes are communal things. The very nature of cakes is you bring the cake into the office and you share it with your friends and there you are, you sad little person. You're reading your tragic little books, eating your little cake by yourself. It's so sad.
Yeah, Duncan Hines microwavable mug cakes for one. And the author of this, the writer of this piece, Maura Judkis, I hope I'm pronouncing that name right, references the saddest book in the world, which was Microwave Cooking for One.
Yeah, see?
might be different. But that's, isn't it like the Easy Bake Mini Wave oven thing that when you were a kid, you made the little cake?
But you'd do that with your friends, and you'd make two or three at a time.
I guess.
Yeah.
I think there's a great branding opportunity with the Hallmark Channel. I see a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
No question about that.
A mug. So it's called a mug cake because it's literally in a mug.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
you pour the ingredients in, you pour a little water in. And
it's going to taste terrible.
Well, she didn't
Whether you're sad or not, you're going to be sad after you eat it because it's going to taste lousy.
No, I bet it tastes okay.
Oh, God.
She did not give it high reviews.
She
said it smelled, the batter puffed up like a marshmallow, and then as soon as the microwave turned off, deflated like a flat tire. It smelled like what a scented candle company thinks a cake should taste like.
Yeah, I think it's going to be awful.
Yeah.
I think it's
yuck.
Mug. It always sounds lousy, too.
It's just
mug
yeah.
cake.
It's,
I never used
yeah,
to eat
one letter
bundt cakes because they sounded so stupid and bad. It just sounds bad, a bundt cake.
Don't disagree.
Yeah,
I know you wanted to talk about Kevin Blackstone's piece.
Well, he just wrote a column today in the paper, and he and I completely agree until we get to the conclusion. But we completely agree on what happened with the NFL this weekend, where he writes, in a span of less than 48 hours, what quarterback Colin Kaepernick birthed in the preseason 2016 as a protest against the unchecked extrajudicial killing of black men in this country was co-opted by mostly white owners into dinner theater. And I think he's right about that. Who's going to stand and who's going to kneel and how are the owners going to get together and all of that. And he said that everyone could digest. Protest defanged. It was a sort of show that the owners who favored presidential candidate Donald Trump, whom they helped elect with tens of millions in campaign contributions, could twist into some sort of celebration of flag and country. And I agree with that completely. I think that when all the teams got out there together, it was not about social was not about social justice. What it was about was the president of the United States was attacking football players.
Correct.
And they were not going to stand for that.
Yes.
And the owners could not stand for that. And the coaches, because all coaches want is to make sure their teams stay together. So coaches could seize this opportunity as a way to have their players quite literally hold hands and be as one and get the politics out of it. Now, where Kevin and I disagree is not so much that Colin Kaepernick is being locked out, but he thinks Colin Kaepernick should play because he's great. And I don't think that great players are left on the sidelines. I think that great players are hired. So we disagree on that, but we don't disagree on that what started out as a very particular social protest in this case turned into something sort of like at an amusement ride, didn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think,
and I don't think it was bad. I think it morphed.
But it definitely morphed, and we have lost track of what Kaepernick. I totally agree. We've lost track of what Kaepernick originally started, or we have to be reminded.
Yes.
Quite a bit. I would say though that I think that the players have been empowered to a degree that they have to be listened to. They have to be listened to by ownership. Even if owners are going to, as Kevin suggests, hijack this and make it dinner theater, the players have a voice that they didn't have before. And the president put them in that spot because whether they were attacked for being football players or not, they have a chance to say, hey, we've been attacked as football players and professionals, but also look at these causes that we care about. There are a lot of them that are very deeply involved in their communities, and they have the right now to have a flag and wave it on that.
Colin Kaepernick, I think the NFL especially has proven if somebody can help them win games, they will overlook anything.
That's what I believe.
Right? So there's that.
Look at Greg Hardy. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So. And as we said before the show, only Donald Trump can make Roger Goodell look good. And then the morphing that I don't like, and he calls it dinner theater, these PR stunts, this turned into opportunities for PR stunts for some of these owners and others, which I don't like.
Yep.
But then one of the many things I love about this country is your right to argue, to debate, to stand for anything, any principle you want, which I think is wonderful, and I think that's getting lost in some
As long as you understand that there are consequences for everything
right,
you say
absolutely.
And do.
Correct.
Dusty Baker was great on this. That's exactly what he said. Yeah.
The smartest thing, I know I've quoted this before, the smartest thing I've heard in all of this was by Arian Foster, who was at that time a running back, I think, for the Texans.
Houston. Yes.
For Houston at that time. Yeah, the Texans.
Yes.
And he said, we have the right to protest, and you have the right to protest our protest.
That's right.
And that is Colin. That's Colin Kaepernick in a nutshell.
Correct.
That's what's happened. So anyway, okay. So we're good on that.
That's right.
So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll do Old Guy, and Steve Sands will join us with a preview of the upcoming President's Cup. Michael starts tomorrow, does it not?
It does indeed.
In Liberty National, in Jersey City, right next to the New York Harbor, right near the Statue of Liberty. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Casper ad. The Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. The mattress industry has forced consumers into paying notoriously high markups. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. Some of these ads are very, very well done, except they don't have commas where they should. The product design features a marriage between foam layers for ideal firmness, just the right sink, and as Michael knows, just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and free returns with a 100-night home trial. And I like the way they do that, 100-night, 100, not 100-day, 100-night, because you're sleeping. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it is quickly becoming the Internet's favorite mattress. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/Tony, and using the promo code Tony at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Once again, that's www.casper.com/Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
On the occasion, the 70th birthday of Meatloaf, whose real name is Marvin Aday, or Aday, I don't know, is from Texas. He worked with my high school classmate, Jimmy Steinman. And this is, I don't know if this the most triumphant song that that they ever did, Paradise by the Dashboard Light. But it certainly was different than any song that was ever before it. It is not only gothic and operatic, but it has Phil Rizzuto in it. You know, and you don't,
right.
you yes. don't really expect this.
Scooter.
You don't expect that in the middle of a seduction, the voice of Phil Rizzuto comes into the radio. And it's, I mean, I think it's, obviously, I think it's brilliant. I'm prejudiced towards Mr. Steinman, Amherst class of 70. But anyway.
The song runs 8 minutes and 28 seconds.
Wow.
And apparently Meatloaf once said, yeah, the original track, it was supposed to be 27 minutes long. Ugh.
Well, so, that's what Steinman did.
Yeah.
I mean, Steinman wrote
operatic
operas. Yeah. That's what he did. I mean, Steinman is the logical heir to Phil Spector in terms of production. Mm. I mean, that's what he did. We are very happy. Last night I thought, let's get Steve Sands on today because maybe he's at the President's Cup at Liberty National and maybe he could talk. And there's a dog barking in the background. Is that your dog?
No dog.
It sounded like a dog.
He's maybe, lying. That was a dog.
I'm at a hotel in downtown Manhattan overlooking the Freedom Tower. It's spectacular.
Okay, that's good. So when does this start? It starts tomorrow?
It starts tomorrow. By the way, when I got your text last night, it made me laugh because the difference between the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup is pretty stark. I mean, if the Ryder Cup was coming up, you would know immediately when it was, where it was.
Your phone is terrible. It's worse than Bob Ryan's phone.
Oof.
You're fading.
No, it's good.
No, you're in the Lincoln Tunnel. No, we can't hear you.
No, I'm near the Holland Tunnel, and I'm sure Barry is happy. And texted or called him about the Skins or Nets lately, but no, we're fine, Tim.
All right.
Steve long ago observed that one of the worst decisions I ever made was allowing Steve to have my phone number.
Yeah, well, because he texts. Yes. He texts like, "Wow, who is on our team? Who's on the President's Cup team?"
Well, the most famous guy would be, he was the captain's pick by Steve Stricker. You know, there are a lot of young guys on the team. You know, Brooks Koepka won the U.S. Open, Daniel Berger, Kevin Kisner.
No, we can't. Steve, seriously, we cannot hear you.
It sounds like a goldfish bowl.
It's really bad. It's really bad. So it's not you, it's your phone. Nigel will call you right back, and maybe this will work. And if not, we can't.
Can't do
like
it.
We could, yeah, it doesn't.
But he could text me because I have the chain that would prove that he's capable of doing that.
No, I text him all the time, but he gets so angry at the Caps.
Oh my God.
He gets angry at the Caps and the Nats bullpen. It always makes me happy when he's angry at the Nats bullpen. So we're going to try this one more time because this is like live podcast radio, right? And then if not, we'll just talk among ourselves because we got Barry and Michael.
He was saying 47-year-old Phil Mickelson was a captain's pick by Steve Stricker, which I don't think was controversial at all, even though Phil hasn't won since the 2013
Correct.
Open Championship at Mirfield. But this is kind of the last, it's kind of the last hurrah for that generation of team play. You know, is Phil going to be on the next Ryder Cup team? Probably, maybe, but... you know, we're really now, Michael, probably ushering in the era when this team is Jordan Spieth's and Patrick Reed's and
Justin Thomas.
Yes, and the generation that you mentioned, they are now becoming the coaches of the next 10 to 15
years.
Captain. So Stricker is the captain.
Stricker's the captain.
Why did I think Furyk was the captain?
Because he's the next Ryder Cup captain, is that right?
Do you go from the...
No. They're run by different entities. The President's Cup is a PGA Tour creation because...
is it better?
They wanted to make...
Yes, it appears better.
Steve Sands better? Are you better? Let's hear.
We're better. We're back.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Wow. Okay, so we were just talking amongst ourselves that Mickelson was a captain's pick by Stricker, and Barry and Michael were saying that this is sort of the swan song of that older generation of player. But what I was curious about is Phil seems to be such an incredible fan favorite in the New York City area. How did that happen? I mean, he's a California kid. How did that happen?
Well, I think he's come close to winning the U.S. Open at Bethpage Black. He always used to play in the Buick Classic over at Westchester.
Yeah.
He always plays in New York, plays well, plays up to the crowd. It's I've told you this before today. It's weird in sports, in individual sports, it's strange. But most of the time, the best, even in team sports, the best guy or girl, they're never the most popular. Jack Nicklaus, the best. Arnold Palmer, the most popular. Tiger, the best of his era. But Phil was the most popular of his era. And in New York, They loved him. And then, you know how New York is. You're from here.
Yep.
They love a great story. They love a guy who shows his passion and opens up the door to them. And he opened that door to them a couple of times, came close to winning that elusive U.S. Open, and never got it done here. I'll bet you he's the Ryder Cup captain in New York at Bethpage Black in 2024 as well.
Wow. That would probably be great fun for him. Is Tiger involved in this? Because he was involved in the Ryder Cup. Is he in this?
He is. We can't get him to come to Congressional or Avenel.
But right.
Can
That's right.
see him this week. You can. Yeah, I knew you'd like that, Barry.
Thank you.
You can see him this week. He'll be an assistant captain to Steve Stricker, along with Fred Couples and Jim Furyk and Davis Love III. So Tiger is into it. He's here this week. He'll one day obviously be a President's Cup captain. He'll also one day be a Ryder Cup captain. But we'll have to wait and see for those days.
Go ahead, Barry.
I think it's remarkable, though, that this is Tiger's kind of first appearance since his Memorial Day.
Is anybody going to ask him questions about it?
The guy you're talking to.
There you go.
Okay, good. Yeah.
That's my job. We'll see if we can get him. At the Ryder Cup last year, I don't know if you remember this. I think Barry and I talked about this. Maybe we did too, Tony and Nigel and Tori. But he was very odd that week as an assistant captain to Davis Love III last year at Hazeltine. And at the end when they won, we come up to him on NBC. Everybody's pouring champagne. We're interviewing everybody. Everybody's happy. And he gave a very, very odd interview. And he just, not that he wasn't into it, it just was very, very standoffish and odd. So I'm curious to see what he'll be like this week. I can't imagine he'll be open, because he's just not that way all the time. But I would imagine that we'd be able to talk to him a little bit about how he's doing and what his contribution is this week.
Isn't part of the oddness, though, that he's never been an assistant anything? So, where does he fit in that kind of world order?
Well, he's got a little bit of practice, Barry, because he did it last year at the Ryder Cup. He's been injured for so long and so out of the mix. When he was an assistant captain for Davis Love III last year, every player told me, every caddy, they're all on the play in the room, assistant captains and captain. There are very few people who are allowed in that room. They all said he was great. He was a leader. He was fantastic to deal with. Gave advice to the younger guys, was leaned on by the veterans, knew when to step in, knew when to step away as far as giving advice and not. He's really into it. And I think that, look, like any athlete, when you can't compete, whether it's through injury and you're currently playing or when you retire, how do you, revive those competitive juices? How do you keep them alive? In golf, one of those ways is to be an assistant captain or a captain at one of these team events every year, a President's Cup this year or a Ryder Cup every other year and next year. And that's what he's been doing. So he's as into it as you can possibly be and not be a player. Doesn't seem right for a Tiger Woods type to be that way, but he really is a great team guy in these events.
And maybe in terms of the media, isn't it possible he just doesn't want to be in the spotlight, let the others be in the spotlight? In terms of you guys who are trying to showcase these players?
I totally get it, Tori. And I talked to Tiger about this every day last year off camera. And I said, listen, eventually you got to say something because a couple of things, Tori. One is, and first and foremost, he's Tiger Woods. All right. So when you're Tiger Woods and you've garnered that much attention, rightfully so, being the best player of your era, you have to expect certain things and the public and us, you want to hear from them. He's Tiger Woods. The other thing is that in these team events, the captains are always talking about their assistant captains. So Jim Furyk is an assistant captain this week. He'll be the Ryder Cup captain for the U.S. next week. We'll talk to Jim. Davis Love III got into the Hall of Fame last night, was a Ryder Cup captain last year. He's an assistant captain. We'll have him on camera as well, how he lends his experiences to the team this week, to the older guys and the younger guys. And I think Fred Couples is here, a three-time winner of the President's Cup as a captain, long-time veteran on tour, very popular player. We'll interview him as well on Golf Channel and also over the weekend on NBC. So for Tiger to be the only guy on the staff, if you will, to not be interviewed either on cable during the week or on the weekend on network, I think Tori is a mistake. I think it's a mistake PR-wise. I think it's a mistake for him personally. I just don't... And professionally, I just think that he's got to understand he's Tiger Woods. People want to hear from him.
Yep.
Yeah, especially in an event where you think the United States is going to win easily, and so you have to have other stories. It's played at Liberty National, which has been on television a number of times as part of the FedEx Cup rotation or something like that. I just want to make sure it's technically in New Jersey. There's no way you're staying in New Jersey. You're at a hotel in Manhattan, aren't you? Did we lose him? Well, that's it.
Wow.
He didn't like the question.
Yeah,
it was such a good question.
He is, in fact, staying in New Jersey.
Really?
You got me? No, I'm not.
Where are you staying?
No. Staying downtown. I'm staying at the W downtown, literally.
Good.
Literally.
No, he said, that's it. We're done. All right. No, you would call him back and tell him we just lose him. It's like this is a Bob Ryan. That we got about 8 good minutes.
Yeah, no, yeah, it worked.
That wasn't bad. We just
and
lost
I thought Barry stepped up very nicely for someone who doesn't cover golf regularly.
He does know golf.
I know he knows it, but it's not like
covers
every day.
The Masters.
I was prepared for that, not for the license plate.
Well, nobody's staying in Jersey there. It's a rich guy course, right?
Rich guy course. It was built on a former dump. They had to spend a lot of money to try and reclaim the land.
Everything in Jersey is built on a former dump.
That course I played, Bayonne, is built on a dump.
There's some drama because they are ending on a par 3, the thinking is most matches never get to the 18th hole, so they would love for that drama to be in that 13, 14, 15, 16 stretch where most of those matches are going to end.
Hmm. Maybe you would know this, Barry. Maybe you would know this, Michael. The European players are only in the Ryder Cup. They're not in this. Who's Australians?
Jason Day and Matsuyama. I mean, it's not like a nothing team.
Correct.
How about the Canadians? Are the Canadians allowed to be in this?
Yes, they are. Yes.
Okay. Is Graham DeLate in this?
I believe he's in it.
I sort of like him.
I always viewed this, everyone knows it's not the Ryder Cup. I always viewed this tournament as more of a celebration of just the quality of worldwide golf. It's going to be a shootout. It's not going to be as sort of matchy and cagey as the Ryder Cup can get.
Vijay used to be in this.
Well, so this the whole thing, you know, when the Ryder Cup started to get big in the 90s, the PGA Tour was sitting there saying, well, this isn't our event. It belongs to the PGA of America. We need to capitalize on the fact that Vijay Singh and Ernie Els and Nick Price and these guys from around the world.
So they
invented this to capitalize on, and Michael's right, the globalization of golf. But it was really because even at that time when the Ryder Cup was growing in interest and ratings, some of the top 10 players in the world were not from either Europe or the United States.
And they couldn't play tour. You had your hand up.
Stupid question. Why is it called the President's Cup? And do I need to worry about golfers now being dragged into?
No. I will say that a few years ago, there was a reception the week of the Tiger tournament, back when we had a Tiger tournament, where both President's Cup teams were honored at the White House, because there is George Bush was probably, the elder George Bush was probably the president during the first President's Cup. I think that's probably right.
The elder?
Yes, the elder.
Who was a golfer, used to play speed golf
all the time. But they honored them at the White House. We went to a reception there. Phil was there and Boehner. So there is some sort of
loose connection.
And it's a little odd because, you know, the other team is made up of players from Fiji and South Africa and Japan.
Well,
the
current president, is a golfer.
I know.
He is a golfer.
Have to worry about him injecting himself into this tournament?
I don't know. I mean, you know, he's already gotten involved in the NBA and he's gotten involved in the NFL. And so, yeah, he might very well do that. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back with email and a jingle. Yes. I'm sorry about Sans's phone, but it was... What are we doing? What are we talking about here?
And he lied about the dog.
He'll text you the rest of his answers.
What's wrong with America? Yeah.
He did say that
cell phones.
He did say he's staying in Manhattan. No way you'd ever stay in Hoboken versus Manhattan, taking the ferry to and from the course.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Well, ferry. He's taking a ferry, so like the really hotshot people get the water taxi.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they get.
Taking the ferry like water working girl, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, with Carly Simon in the background. Yeah, yeah. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the MeUndies ad, and this is the male version. As you know, we did the female version, I think, once last week, and we had a suggestion that the next time we do the female version, Rieger should come in and do the female version, but I'm going to do the male version. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? But that perfect balance is hard to find. So don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will own, made from a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is three times softer than cotton. They used to name the fabric. Maybe there's trouble in naming the fabric these days. So we're going to skip that part. Ultimate feel-good undies for when you want to feel naked but not be naked. Michael, you have these, right? Are you wearing them today?
No, not today.
But you like them.
I love my MeUndies.
Yeah. Ladies, by the way, will love the soft, eco-friendly fabric. So we have the female version sort of in here. It's 100% satisfaction guarantee. They guarantee you will love your undies or you get your money back. Right now, MeUndies has an exclusive offer just for my listeners listening to this fabulous pod. You can get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. And MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear that they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So you order a pair, and if you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund. This is a no-brainer to try. 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. What are you waiting for? To get your 20% off your free shipping and the 100% satisfaction guarantee and get the best and softest underwear you will ever own, go to MeUndies, M-E-U-N-D-I-E-S, MeUndies.com/TonyK. That's MeUndies.com/TonyK. This is a limited time offer, so what are you waiting for? Start wearing the best underwear of your life. They want me to say it changed my life. I just think that's a stretch. But it's time to let MeUndies change yours. Go to MeUndies.com/TonyK right now.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
There's drive-thru Tony. He's grabbing a bite. A little grease is good for the heart. Can't wait for your cardiologist to get a fresh look at your chart. Yikes! Fried egg burrito, tell you that's just great. That even makes Kornheiser say, why Taco Bell? Why?
I really like this. John Fitzpatrick is just wonderful. Those are the Eagles, of course. That's a wonderful tune. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Richard Justice of MLB.com and to Steve Sands of the Golf Channel and NBC, except that we couldn't hear him most of the time, right, for coming on the show. I'd also like to thank today's sponsors, MeUndies, Spotify, Casper Mattresses, and Harry's Razors. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We have a million emails. I mean, we just have a million. This is from Jeff Piggott, who has emailed us for years and years and years.
We love Jeff.
And there's a picture of him and his friend Andy, and it says, every time I hear the Harrys read, I think of two regular guys named Jeff and Andy, who are pictured in this particular note. But these two live in Des Moines, and they do not own a razor company. This weekend, Jeff Piggott and Andy Miller played a regular course and posted a 74 and 76, respectively. Not bad for an 8 and 11. A photo of the card appears below. If you'd like the actual card for your elevator, I would trade it for the leather scorecard holder you won this weekend. Please tell Mr. NPR, referring to Michael Kornheiser, that I use this type of holder not to look more like Phil or Jordan, but because my large American bottom sweats quite a bit, causing the scores to fade on my card. You can also tell him it is not raining here.
Let's keep the card in your golf bag.
And that was Mr. NPR with a rejoinder. Dan Rice from Ventura, California, by way of Fairfax, Virginia. I enjoyed hearing your ever-so-brief foray into the world of sports car racing on the show with the mention of the signed Christina Nielsen hat. You mentioned it was delivered by a stunning woman. I couldn't help but wonder if the hat was delivered by the defending IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship champion in the GT Daytona class herself. Could you identify her by her bio on the series website? No. Her and her teammate Alessandro Balzan, I hope I pronounced that correctly, they're one race away from winning a second consecutive title. So if they lose, I will assume it's a Mr. Tony kind of jinx. Thanks for the hours of entertainment you and the crew provide. And when can I expect Michael and Steve Sands to start a weekly golf podcast? That would be good.
Excellent idea.
From Werner Milano in Wellington, New Zealand.
Oh, how about that?
Wow. During your Tuesday show, Wednesday in New Zealand, you asked for a box of Beats. Beats by Dre is like the Subaru of headphones. Bose, Mr. Tony, go for Bose. Liz Clark wanted it. She wanted it, not
But
me.
You've got Beats headphones right now. You like those, don't you?
I do like these.
Yes.
From Jim Mrokowski in New Berlin, Wisconsin. So funny you should mention the Box Tops on yesterday's show. I was able to see the current version of the band this past weekend at the Wisconsin State Fair. Bill Cunningham, one of the original members of the band, mentioned the 1 minute and 51 seconds. Yes, you were correct on the length of the song. The Letter was number one on the Billboard 50 years ago to the date. Ironically, at the same stage a year ago, I saw the Rascals. If I only knew who the original members were.
Who are they?
Any ideas? Gene Cornish, Dino Danelli, Eddie Brigati, and Felix Cavalieri.
Wow.
From Will Walsh from Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. Everyone, I'm a loyal little who loves the show, and I need your advice. I'm taking the woman related to me by marriage on a trip to D.C. to celebrate our 13th anniversary. So far, I'm planning to get tickets to Game 1 of the National League Division Series, visit the memorials, and then go to some free museums. So romantic. I reached out to my Pennsylvania senator to visit the White House, but like the Warriors, my wife refuses to go. What other activities can you recommend? Also, what downtown 3.5-star restaurant do you recommend?
Anniversary dinner at Chatter.
Yes, anniversary dinner and chatter.
Right, yes.
And a 3.5-star hotel.
Well,
restaurant.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. P.S. My wife drives a Subaru. P.P.S. I will attempt to get to Chatter for lunch. Any monuments or museums in Friendship Heights? No, there's a Saks.
Neiman Marcus? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a Saks. Pretty yeah. good. You can say hello to Chauncey. Making a special trip to visit a restaurant podcast studio owned by the Orange PTI guy, DNA Daddy, Coach Williams, and the Socialite will not mean anything to her.
I mean, there are people that it's actually a world where those people exist.
From Jim Flynn in Colebrook, Connecticut. Lighten up on Clem. He and I were classmates during our Rhodes Scholarship year, during which he read for a PhD in snake handling. By the way, his last name was Clem. Yeah. His first name wasn't Clem. That puts a whole different light on it. Danny Mills, Atlanta, Georgia. Today I had the privilege of playing in the 7th Annual Naismith Awards Invitational Celebrity Golf Tournament at the Capital City Club in Atlanta, Georgia. As we were waiting to head out on the course, I found myself standing next to none other than Gary Williams. I was thrilled to spend a few minutes speaking with him about what else, Chatter. Of course, I mentioned the podcast, and he seemed pleasantly surprised that he had encountered a loyal little. Before saying our goodbyes, I told him I was looking forward to visiting Chatter and enjoying a cup of Wilbon's chili. Gary remarked that it was important to keep Wilbon happy, lest we run the risk of upsetting him and having to deal with the fallout. The only thing missing was the opportunity to shout La Cheeserie. All the best to you and the crew. I didn't know Gary knew there were littles. I really didn't. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
What a waste of time. God.
Take, but not that look on your face. Trying to find the words that I can say. In the end, it's always the same. If I could write you a love song, nothing ever would go wrong. If I could write you a love song, I could keep you safe from harm. If I could write you a love song, things would never end like this. But I'd still be alone tonight. Some people do change. You're no good for me, and I'm no good at all. Your cigarette's in my ashtray. Another night, and everything's always the same. If I could write you a love song, nothing ever would go wrong. If I could write you a love song, I would keep you safe from harm. If I could write you a love song, things would never end like this. But I'd still be alone tonight. If I could dim the moon and hide my eyes, you'd never have
to say goodbye. If I could just be still for a little while, never ever leave my side. And if I could, I'd do it all for you. I'll try as long as you want me to. If I could write you a love song, if I could write you a love song, if I could write you a love song, nothing ever would go wrong. If I could write you a love song, I could keep you safe from home. If I could write you a love song, things would never end like this. But I'm always alone at night.